The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
No bueno. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. That is Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman. I'm Molly Karam Rose. Fellas, top of the morning to you. Let's get it. LeBron James playing more minutes than any other Laker at the age of 36. Of course, obviously, Anthony Davis hasn't been available of late, but he isn't feeling sorry for himself. King James, talk to me.
I'm resting now. I'm sitting here talking to you guys. I'm resting when I get in my car and head home. I'm resting when I get home. I'll rest tomorrow. You know, I think this whole narrative of, LeBron needs more rest, or I should take more rest, or I should take time here, has become a lot bigger than what it actually really is. I've never talked about it. I don't talk about it. I don't believe in it. We all need more rest. I mean, this is a fast turnaround from last season, and we all wish we could have more rest. But, you know, I'm here to work, and I'm here to punch my clock in and be available to my teammates.
All right, Max, you're a bandwagon Lakers fan, so I'll start with you. I'd actually have more respect for you if you became a Nets fan at this point, but that discussion's for another day. Max, do you think the Lakers should be worried that LeBron is playing too many minutes at this point in the season and at the age of 36?
Of course, because LeBron James is in uncharted territory. Of course Lakers fans should be concerned he's playing too many minutes. Dave McMenamin, who does excellent work on ESPN.com, go check it out. Since the start of the month, before the start of this month, LeBron James was averaging, I believe it was 43rd in terms of number of minutes played per game. That's not so bad. He's, a lot of great players play a lot of minutes. Understood. That's not top 10 or something like that. Lakers are doing fine. Since the start of this month, it's 11 games. Since the start of this month, he's leading the league in minutes played. Now, the reason that's an issue is because every single time LeBron James takes the court, he's setting a new record, sort of like Tom Brady in the NFL. No one has ever played at his level, having logged this many minutes, this many miles on an NBA court. Ever. Never. Not even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's never been done before. So every time he takes the court, we're learning something new. And what it seems, and it's natural, AD goes down and you pull even harder. The sense with the team is we need more from our leader. This is why, Stephen A., you and I debated this yesterday. Does LeBron need to do more? Sometimes less is more. Sometimes when you pull too hard, it can be counterproductive because it's not like LeBron normally slacks off. He does everything in his power always to help his team. So now we're asking him to do even more, or really, as he's putting it, he's asking himself. Not a good idea. Number one, because it seems the team and his own performance regresses slightly as his minutes go up. Understandable. And number two, knock wood. Stephen A., you want to avoid a catastrophic injury given the number of minutes this dude has already played in his career, given the fact he never really has an offseason because he plays in the finals every single year, given his usage rate and everything he has to do, not to mention his off-the-court responsibilities, which are more than any superstar in any league on the planet Earth. Yes, I am worried, as a Lakers fan, about LeBron James playing too much.
Well... Normally, I could just dismiss what you're saying because it's the sport of basketball, and I don't know if you should have a license to talk basketball as much as you do personally. But, you know, it really in this particular instance, and Molly will laugh at this because I'm allowed to lean on football, Max Kellerman, to have fun with you this morning. I appreciate your take. I appreciate you starting your take off at 10 a.m. Eastern time, 7 a.m. Pacific out here in L.A. I appreciate you starting the show off this way because you've got me inspired because, you know, Molly, correct me if I'm wrong, because I think you were sitting in that chair. Max Kellerman started on First Take on July 25th, 2016. Max didn't think I would remember such a thing, but I do. And on that particular day.
It is kind of unbelievable you remember the exact day.
You stopped winning debates. Of course you remember.
Absolutely, right? So Max
Kellerman. The last
Kellerman,
debate you won must have been July 24th.
Hold on, don't interrupt me.
Part of him died that day.
I did not interrupt you, Max. I did not interrupt you. And of course you win debates because you take nine different takes, so nine different sides. So that's how you ensure that you don't lose. But here's the deal.
Only seems that way, brother.
July 25th, 2016, that was the day that Max Kellerman said that Tom Brady was over a cliff, would be in short order within the next 18 months. Over the next five seasons that we have been on the air, Tom Brady has went to four Super Bowls and won three. And this is the expert that wants us to take into account how, you know what, age, attrition, father time are something to be concerned about. You would think, Molly, that this man has learned his lesson about sitting there and writing folks' epitaph a little bit too early. You would think that Max Kellerman would recognize
about
greatness and how there's an aberration that occurs every now and then, and that there are people that defy the odds. Even Max Kellerman has ultimately came out and said, there are certain people who defy the odds, which brings us to LeBron James. Who's hurt for the Los Angeles Lakers right now? That would be Anthony Davis. It would even be Dennis Schroeder. It would not be LeBron James. LeBron James has not missed a game this year. LeBron James is 36. He's in his 18th season. We've had Russell Westbrook missing games. All right, of course, Clay's out for the season. Kevin Durant has missed games. And by the way, Kevin Durant, who's fresh off an Achilles tear, is averaging 35.7 minutes a game when he plays. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is that when you look at LeBron James, his minutes are not something to be concerned about, because if there's one thing that LeBron James has earned over more than anything else he has earned in his career, it's to be trustworthy when it comes to his own body, his own conditioning, what he can take, what he needs, et cetera, et cetera. Be concerned about LeBron James' three-point shooting since the month of February began. Be concerned about that. Certainly be concerned about his free throw shooting, because he missed another key pivotal free throw last night. And obviously he's a career like 73-74% shooter. He ain't the most reliable shooter from the free throw line in the world. Be concerned about those things. But to be concerned about his minutes and to be concerned about his health, where there are a litany of examples to point to with dudes who are younger, but somehow, some way, can't stay nearly as healthy as this guy continues to stay throughout his illustrious career. Throughout it, I would say, let's all pump the brakes, relax. If LeBron James says he's okay, he's okay. If he says there's a reason to be concerned, then we need to be concerned. He has earned that because his reputation, his history, and his resume demands it.
Well, you got jokes, but there is truth to what you say in terms of giving LeBron the benefit of the doubt.
There's always truth to what I say.
Both with Tom Brady, and I was wrong on the cliff prediction with Brady, obviously, but I was just using all of human history versus the odds that Tom Brady would defy all that by this margin. He did it.
That's what you're doing with LeBron.
Yes. That's right. And LeBron has already done something like what Brady is doing. But that doesn't guarantee the future. Let me give you a couple examples. Let me give you one notable example. The last Lakers great on this level was Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, also straight from high school, also didn't suffer through major catastrophic injuries through his career, took fanatical care of his body, experimental treatments and nutrition and workouts, and was able to play season in and season out at an absurdly high level on offense, and the dude played defense, both. And I was in L.A., Stephen A., on the air on L.A. radio doing afternoon drive when Kobe Bryant staged essentially a mutiny against Mike D'Antoni, because what D'Antoni was doing was not working with the Lakers' dream team. Remember the Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, Pau Gasol, Kobe Bryant dream team? They're supposed to win the whole thing. They weren't going to make the playoffs. It was so disastrous. Kobe said, forget all this. I'm running the show. This is how we're doing it. I'm going to play over 40 minutes a game. And D'Antoni, I don't think, felt he had the standing to take Kobe out, especially once Kobe basically took over the team. And he was playing like 40-something minutes a game for a couple weeks. And I was on the air saying, wait, careful. And then the Achilles went. Now, Stephen A., it's not the same thing. I'm not pretending this is the same thing. It's LeBron's not averaging 40-something minutes a game. But he is, since the start of this month, averaging the most minutes in the NBA. And the fact of the matter is, the performance of the team is regressing, even without AD. You'd say, well, take AD out. You'd expect a little bit more, and they're getting a little less. And you have to wonder at this age, number one, is it having that impact on his own and the team's performance? Number two, what's it going to mean for the finals or for the playoffs
get to
when they
chime
roll
in
around?
With this soliloquy
and number three,
that you're
the risk of
out.
Injury.
First of all, you're wrong. Mike, that wasn't Kobe just doing mutiny. Mike D'Antoni was more than willing to allow Kobe to play those minutes. It wasn't because of cachet. That's how Mike D'Antoni rolled. Go look at
there.
Steve Nash. Go, and so was I. And I spoke to Mike D'Antoni about it. Mike D'Antoni made no apologies for the minutes that Kobe Bryant was playing at that particular moment in time. He did not mind at all. That's what Mike D'Antoni does. Go look at Steve Nash. Go look at his resume with Steve Nash. Go look at what he did. Go look at the minutes Amari Stoudemire was playing before his knees gave out. Mike D'Antoni, the Sean Marions of the world and others. Mike D'Antoni had no problem riding. That brother would drive you into the ground. It's about now. You didn't practice heavy with Mike D'Antoni because he knew you were going to play those minutes.
Whatever, he still played the minutes.
That's not the point. The point is you said it was Kobe, and I'm telling you that's Mike D'Antoni as well because Mike D'Antoni's philosophy was.
I have reason to know it was Kobe, but go ahead.
Excuse me. You don't have reason to know. You don't know what you're talking about. That is false, okay? It wasn't
no.
just Kobe. It
really?
Was Mike D'Antoni. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't know. I'm telling you, you don't know. The fact of the matter is, this is what Mike D'Antoni does. That was his reputation. That is what he has done. And in terms of LeBron James, as it pertains to Tom Brady, what I'm saying to you is this. Because Tom Brady was that aberration, I'm saying, why can't you look at LeBron with all the evidence there for you to say, he's the aberration. He's not the one to apply your usual logic towards that father time, attrition, and all of those things.
That's just the injury part.
That's LeBron James. How come he can't be trusted?
You're focusing on the injury part. What about the performance part?
What do you mean, what about the performance part? The brother had 31 and 13 last night.
LeBron James, it's not that he can't ball, Stephen A. I'm talking about his performance now and in the future. His efficiency on offense right now is the lowest since his rookie year. It's still better than almost everyone else. He's LeBron freaking James.
But he's been struggling for
the
last
month.
But
it's the lowest since his rookie year. And he plays into the finals every year.
But this was going on even before Anthony Davis got injured. It's not because of Anthony Davis being injured.
For me.
I'm sorry, Molly. Go ahead.
Right. It's declined since then.
Let's all take a moment here. This was a lot hot out of the gate on a Tuesday morning. I'm into it. We're going to revisit this a little bit later in the show, so you guys will have more time. I want to get to the team that LeBron is a fan of. Your Dallas Cowboys, Stephen A. Smith. It's a big day for them. Today's the day Dak can get franchise tagged for the second year in a row. The deadline to franchise a player is March 9th. Stephen A., if this is Dak's last year in Dallas, should it be, if he's playing under the franchise tag again?
I'm sorry, Molly, I couldn't hear your question. Could you repeat that, please?
No worries. The question didn't really make sense. Do you think this should be Dak's last year in Dallas if he's franchise tagged again?
I think it will be, and I think it should be, because I think it's just the latest piece of evidence that shows, for some reason, Jerry Jones is just averse to making a long-term investment in Dak Prescott and lets us completely under his conditions. Excuse me, I was getting ready to sneeze. That's really the bottom
Bless
line.
You.
And for me personally, here's what I come down to. It's consistent with what Jerry Jones has done since Dak Prescott arrived in this league. People keep forgetting that. There's a pattern here. When Dak Prescott first arrived in this league as a rookie, he was playing lights out in the preseason. Tony Romo was enduring questionable health, and people were contemplating whether or not he'd even play anymore. And Jerry Jones held on for dear life to the prospect of Tony Romo returning. He was very, very, very reluctant to give the reins to Dak Prescott. And people try to forget that, but I never have. And I said to myself, excuse me, what is this about? Tony Romo clearly was gifted, but in the same breath, he had a special relationship with Jerry Jones. Nobody denies that. Everybody knows it. And Jerry Jones was reluctant to give the realms to Dak Prescott. Well, he ultimately had no choice because Tony Romo would retire and obviously become a star in the broadcast booth, which we all recognize. Dak Prescott has been balling ever since. He's 42 and 27 as a starter. He's had nearly 5,000-yard passing seasons, 30 touchdowns, 11 interceptions coming into last season, all right, based on what he did in 2019. He's got him to the playoffs twice. He's won a playoff game, okay? This is a guy that clearly is the leader of the franchise. He's basically the umbilical cord to Jerry Jones in terms of the Colin Kaepernick issues, the social justice issues, the manner in which he conducts himself and is the face of the Cowboys franchise. He has been as close to a model citizen as it gets for the Dallas Cowboys. And still, Jerry Jones can't reach an accord with him. And think about this, Max, and I hand it off to you by saying this. Think about this. It's not like Jerry Jones, oh my goodness, don't want to sign him. Oh, no. It's that Dak Prescott wanted to sign for four years coming in the last season. Jerry Jones wants him for five. Now Dak Prescott wants him for three. Jerry Jones wants him for longer than that. I know salary cap situations, CBA negotiations coming up, all of those things play a role. But, my God, it's like backwards and stuff. Anything it takes to not commit to this dude on terms that he has earned is what Jerry Jones seems hell-bent on doing. The Dallas Cowboys will pay for this. They will pay for this dearly. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's just further evidence why they'll never win a Super Bowl in Jerry Jones' lifetime.
This should not be Dak's last year in Dallas if they franchise him, because he's in the driver's seat. Right now, Dak is sitting pretty. By the way, when you talk about all that stuff with Dak, the only thing I can come up with, Stephen A., is Jerry Jones keeping the Cowboys' name in the news, because heavens knows it's not because they win Super Bowls, right? So this is a way to get us talking about the Dallas Cowboys. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Think about this. Ed Werder, I thought, put it beautifully on Get Up. I think it was last week. Jerry Jones and the Cowboys so wanted that extra fifth year of Dak Prescott. They so wanted that they wouldn't take 4 years, to the point where they traded it for 1 year of Dak Prescott. You want five so bad that you take one over four? It's insanity. Now consider this, the franchise tag. He made $32 million almost guaranteed. When he got hurt, didn't matter. That money was guaranteed last year. He's about to make $37 million on the franchise tag this year if they play him. They're 70 over two, right? He's well over $50 million next year if they were to franchise him again. There's your $120 million over 3 years. It's $40 a year just like he wants. What can Jerry do? It's worse than that for Jerry Jones, Stephen A., because you prorate those signing bonuses. The bonus is the guaranteed portion of the contract. So all that guaranteed money, you could say, well, this is over X number of years. It's this much guaranteed. You can't. With a franchise tag, it all counts against the cap. You think the Cowboys are going to have $53, $54 million counting against the cap for their quarterback next year? No way. But you know what else it means, Stephen A.? His number goes up. Because if they franchise him this year and they don't have him to a long-term deal, next year he's like, you want to franchise me again? Go ahead. That'd be $54 million or whatever it is, please, just for 1 year. So now what's his price for a three-year or a two-year deal? Well, if you're going to get over 50 for this year, now a two-year deal is going to cost the Cowboys guaranteed over $100 million for 2 years. So why would that go anywhere? This is remember how Kirk Cousins made off with all those franchise tags? This is that on steroids. Dak is sitting pretty right now.
Listen, I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. The point is that at the end of the day, what it comes down to is that, you know, I lean on what Jerry Jones has been doing since Dak Prescott arrived in the NFL. He's never fully embraced this guy. The most glowing words we've ever heard about Dak Prescott from Jerry Jones is when Dak Prescott broke his ankle and was out for the year. And you knew he was out for the year. So you were sad for him and you gave him a lot of love at that particular moment in time. You certainly didn't give it to him before or prior to that time. And we know that Dak Prescott has earned a long-term deal. We know that he has earned a contract commensurate with the Carson Wentz, the Jared Goffs of the world and others. And we know that Jerry Jones, to some degree, has offered that. But to want to lock this man in, just think about it. You're Jerry Jones. What are you, 78 years old? 78 years old. You haven't won a Super Bowl in the last quarter century, okay? You got about three playoff wins on your resume in that span. And you're sitting there and holding out on a guy because you want him for five or more years as opposed to the four he wants to sign for. That's the reason. At age 78, a quarter century removed from winning your last title, that you holding out on this guy. Tell me what type of sense that makes. That makes no sense.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
All right, so we know many teams around the league are considering a change at the most important position in football. Cam Newton is one of the many free agent quarterbacks after his one-year deal in Foxborough expired. Cam was asked on the I Am an Athlete podcast about his future as a starting quarterback.
I hear all that, bro. Like, I ain't never been a favorite. Going into last year, is he healthy? I just want to finish healthy. Now it's like if I'm able to learn his system, like, come on, bro, I can't go out like that. My pride won't even allow me to do that. And you could talk about this, you could talk about that, you could talk about whatever. Listen, bro, there's not 32 guys better than me. Mm. Mm. Put it like that. So you're asking me, like, bro, I'm not 32.
That's fair. He isn't 32. Both Cam and fellow number one overall pick Jameis Winston are among a group of free agent signal callers. Stephen A., which quarterback would you rather have next season? Would you go Jameis or Cam?
Oh, man. I got to admit it. It would be Jameis Winston. Cam Newton, I appreciate what he's done in his career. And I'm not trying to say that it's over. I'm just basically saying last year you threw 8 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. Now, I know that has a lot to do with you being bereft of weapons in New England, which is a Bill Belichick problem more so than it is his. I get all of that. But when I look at Jameis Winston, I got the 30 interceptions. I got him putting new meaning to 30 for 30. I got all of that. But the last time we saw this brother as a starting quarterback, he did throw for 5,000 yards. He did throw 33 touchdowns. Now, he was a mistake waiting to happen, and we get all of that. But he was also somebody that could make things happen as well. And so when I look at it from that perspective, we're not saying the same things about Cam Newton right now. He can't run the ball the way that he used to because he's not the athlete that he once was because he's been beaten up, age and attrition. We appreciate what he's done. He's a former league MVP. He's been in the league for 10 years. He's guided the team to a Super Bowl. We know the talent that he has possessed, but age and attrition can beat you up. And I think that's something that we have to pay attention to. And if what we have to go on is the last time we saw these two dudes as a starting quarterback, you have to ask yourself the simple question, even with the 30 interceptions, do you want to go the route of a Jameis Winston who threw for over 5,000 yards and 33 touchdowns, or do you want to go the route of Cam Newton? That to me is the question. I'm not saying Cam Newton is finished. And I certainly, again, want to reiterate that kid that was talking to him the way that he did, it was incredibly disrespectful the way that he talked to Cam Newton. You know, most people would never achieve what Cam Newton has achieved in their lifetime on any level. Most people would not do what Cam Newton has done. You show that man the respect and deference he deserves, particularly if you're a high school kid and a football player who may never, ever be the player that Cam Newton once was. But in fairness, you know, to the Jameis Winstons of the world, if I'm comparing the two right now, all I got to go on, Max, is the last time I saw them both throwing the football. Okay. And you know how big I am about that. And I just think that Jameis Winston would be the better option at this point in time.
Well, if you go, look, the answer is Cam Newton. I'd rather have Cam than Jameis next season as my starting quarterback. Now, I'm not even going to go through the career argument, Stephen A., because you're talking about the last time we saw them. What could we expect from them this year? But it is somewhat relevant, the fact that Cam Newton at one point in his career was voted by his peers the year he won MVP and took his team to the Super Bowl, by his peers in the middle of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers' prime. That's the best player in football. Other football players said that. The voters said that. And it was the truth. He was once the best player in football for a year. Okay. When last seen healthy, in an environment in which he was familiar in a normal season, Cam Newton was a better passer than he was the year he was considered the best player in the world, right? Norv Turner was the offensive coordinator. You and I have discussed that. I'm not even going to usually really use that as the basis of my argument, but it's in there somewhere. It should be, unless if you really think he's not finished, then stuff like that is, what's the highest height Jameis Winston's ever hit? Nothing like Cam Newton's. So Cam at his best was a better quarterback. But as you said, the question is, when last seen? This is actually a very good kind of subject, because think about it like this. Tom Brady was in New England. He looked around and said, I can't do anything with this. Got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. So he goes to Tampa because they're so loaded and wins the Super Bowl. Going from first round KO loss in the playoffs to winning the Super Bowl, because he went from New England's situation to Tampa's. Now, who are the other quarterbacks who've quarterbacked in New England and Tampa most recently other than Tom Brady? It just so happens to be Cam Newton and Jameis Winston. And what did they do? What was the record of their teams? Because when we look at the numbers and everything, that's just means to an end. Can you lead your team to wins? Actually, they both went 7-9. Jameis went 7-9 in the loaded team that Tom Brady won a Super Bowl with. Cam went 7-9 in the team that Tom Brady got knocked out in the first round and left because the situation was no good. And Jameis was healthy when he played in Tampa. Cam came off a catastrophic injury, missed a year, into a COVID year, couldn't practice with his teammates, got COVID himself, facilities were shut down, couldn't practice even more, and still went 7-9. And Stephen A., not only did he go 7-9, he beat a whole bunch of really good teams. So not only is their height in their career, Cam hit a much greater height than Jameis, but most recently, in terms of the teams, like where you can directly compare them, Cam had a better effect on the team than Jameis. Same team Tom Brady left, same record as Jameis, 7-9.
I don't disagree with that, Max. I'm just saying that at the end of the day, I'm watching Cam throw the football, and I've been very, very consistent with this throughout Cam's career. I think he's only thrown more for better than 60% of his passes, only completed better than 60% of his passes 2 or 3 years in his entire career. Okay, he's been in the league for 10 years. He's not an accurate thrower of the football, and that's what I pay attention to. Now, obviously, with Jameis Winston's 30 interceptions, they are what they are. I'm just looking at Cam Newton, and I'm thinking about the years that he was running with the football. Ron Rivera told him to slow that down because, obviously, you're going to subject yourself to unusual punishment, and that's not necessary in terms of the longevity of your career once that's taken into consideration. I'm looking at Jameis Winston. You got a fresh arm. I'm also looking at him being coached by Bruce Arians. Now, we appreciate what Bruce Arians has done this year. We certainly appreciate the staff that he has assembled. We get all of that. But in the end, Bruce Arians has never been confused with being Bill Belichick. And the system that Cam Newton went into plays a role as well, because sometimes with him and Josh McDaniel, who are Super Bowl championships 3, 4, 5 times over, in Bill Belichick's case 8, you got to think about all of those things taken into consideration as well before you make that assertion. And in my mind, I'm just looking at my eyes and I'm saying, in terms of a thrower of the football, Cam Newton cocking his head back, the release not being that quick, his throws not being that accurate, for me, from the quarterback position, as a thrower of the football, I think Cam Newton is an all-world athlete. I've never confused him with being an all-world thrower of the football. And that's just where I'm at within the last scene. I mean, I would have to tell you that to me, I would think that Jameis Winston has a chance of being a better passer of the football at this point of his career, you know, having so much time to do that, whereas Cam, even though he's only 31, 32 years of age, he's gone through a lot in his career. I don't know if we'll ever see the old Cam again. That's my reservation.
That's fair. That's fair to say, hey, Bill Belichick's not just coaching the quarterback. He's coaching the whole team, and he's the greatest coach of all time. And that gives Cam an advantage, and I get that. I think that's a fair point. And as a thrower of the football, I get it too. Here's the difference. If I could see situations where I think, like Washington, Cam could start there. I don't see any situation where I look and I go, Jameis could start there. I think it's a mistake to start Jameis.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Elsewhere, now former Mariners president and CEO Kevin Mather resigned Monday after a video of him expressing his views of the club's organizational strategy and opinions about some players surfaced and received widespread backlash. Mariners chairman and managing partner John Stanton said he was extremely disappointed when he learned of Mather's comments, which were made on February 5th and posted online over the weekend. Max, you're up first. What's your reaction to Mather resigning?
Well, when taken together, when you look at all the comments together, what it leaves is the strong impression that this is not the kind of person you want running your franchise. You know, a CEO, people talk about leadership and this and that, really more than anything, a team president, it's about judgment. It's about decision making. He showed extremely poor judgment. Before you get to all the things he said, which each taken individually maybe is survivable by him. He could explain away each one individually, but not all together. Keep in mind, this is a guy who, according to the Seattle Times, over a decade ago, when the HR department apparently reported to him, had two different women come forward with allegations and both left with settlements. He not only survived that, he got promoted. By the way, the Mariners have not fared well under his stewardship. In fact, they are one of the lesser franchises in the league over that time. So you have a guy with issues in his past, who's exercised extremely poor judgment and who's been a failure at his position. Seems like a good reason to get rid of him. When you really look at what he said, he complained about a player not knowing English well. He's a great human being, doesn't know English well enough. I mean, the player didn't sign up to learn English. He signed up to play baseball. And nevertheless, the player in question took great pride in the fact that within a year, he was conversant in English. So obviously, he's insulted, and obviously a fan base who may also be, where English is a second language, may also be offended by that. Hey, we're doing the best we can. He went one by one over, you know, in kind of offending different players. And he did it in front of a group of people, a Rotary Club. That's where you say these things, including making stories up, Stephen A., which is just bizarre. He just made some stories up, fabricated them out of whole cloth. Why would you do that unless you're trying to play the big shot? You want to regale this crowd. But why would you tell details that you wouldn't say publicly to that group? It's because you feel a kind of intimacy. Like maybe that this group is not public. This group is private. It's just with us. These are the people that I feel comfortable confiding this stuff. Rotary Club? That is how you feel comfortable? It seems like a good reason to get rid of a bad executive, Stephen A.
Well, I don't disagree, and we don't have any kind of disagreement here. He offended a former All-Star from Japan. He offended a prospect from the Dominican Republic, addressing, you know, not knowing the English language as much as he would have liked them to do. Remember, this is an individual that reached a settlement when he was accused of harassing a female employee. I don't know how long earlier that was. I don't know all the details, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I do. What I will say is this. You know, I remember, and I hearken back in situations like this, Max Molly as well. I hearken back to a situation years ago when the late, great George Michael, God rest his soul, he was a great friend and a great broadcaster out of the Washington, D.C. area. He was interviewing Charles Mann on his sports machine, and Jack Kent Cook was the owner of the then Washington Redskins franchise and what have you. And he was bringing up the whole Native American thing and how it was offensive. The Redskins name was offensive to them. And Charles Mann said, In the midst of Jack Kent Cook just completely being defiant and saying he would never change the name and things of that nature, Charles Mann said, it doesn't matter that it's not offensive to him or to me. The fact that it's offensive to them should be enough for us to modify our thinking to some degree and act accordingly. And I take that, I use that as an example to point to a lot of things that we're dealing with in this day and age. On so many occasions, people want to have a problem with the offended party instead of looking at themselves and saying, excuse me, it's not about me. It is about them. If you're talking about black people, if you're talking about folks, you know, whether you're Dominican or you're Japanese or you're a female, whatever the case may be, if they are offended, why would that not be enough for you to modify your level of thinking, heighten your level of sensitivity, and just be thoughtful enough and respectful enough to recognize the fact that they feel that way should be enough for me to know better. This guy Mather has been an executive with the Seattle Mariners for I don't know how long. What I do know is that they haven't been to the postseason since 2001. That's the longest drought in Major League Baseball. So on the baseball field, you don't have the decency to put forth a competitive enough team to be relevant. But then on top of it all, behind the scenes, you have an executive with this kind of thinking caught on video, spewing these kind of remarks, fresh off of a settlement that was reached because he was harassing a female employee. What the hell is going on? You just look at some of these situations and you just say to yourself, my God, if people in leadership positions, there's a whole bunch of people out there that might think like this. And my attitude is that it's a crying shame. It's a damn shame. But what really gives me cause to pause and heightens my level of concern is the fact that this guy was just stupid enough to get caught. What about the plethora of executives out there that are skilled enough to avoid scrutiny because they don't publicize their beliefs, but they harbor this stuff nonetheless? Who do they employ? Who do they get rid of? How do they treat people they employ? What kind of things do they encourage being disseminated, et cetera, et cetera? It kind of scares you to think that there are people out here who conduct themselves the way that they do and they're leaders. But we know what we've been dealing with for the last few years. And as a result of it, we see, you know, how we've regressed as a nation in certain respects. And I hope that we can get back on the right track and recognize just the importance of being sensitive and thoughtful towards other people and recognizing the fact that just because they may be offended, that should be enough for us to pump the brakes and really modify our level of thinking.
The fact that I think where he was and who he was speaking to is relevant here. the Rotary Club, you know, like a group of basically business leaders. So here are people who employ other people, many of them, right? These are the bosses. These are the entrepreneurs. And in front of that group, he took that as like the in-group where he could let his hair down, so to speak, and really say what's on his mind. And even if he didn't, you know, what he said was this one hasn't learned the language well enough or this. But he also made up stories about he wants to regale them.
Try
he wants
learning
to impress
a second
them
language.
About a player putting another player in a locker that never happened. So that really, I think the setting and to whom he was speaking is significant here, because when he felt like he was talking to maybe like-minded or a sympathetic audience, then he could say all these kind of things that you would think he would never say publicly.
Molly, your thoughts?
Let me leave you with this. If he was comfortable saying that in front of the Rotary Club, letting his hair down, imagine what he says in his home. It's just a perfect storm. It was too many things. It was time to go. You gots to go.